Mark Barrowcliffe spent his teen years pretending to be a wizard, a warrior, or an evil priest. He was one of millions of boys who played Dungeons and Dragons during the 1970s and 80s. Barrowcliffe chronicles his obsession with D&D in his memoir, The Elfish Gene, Dungeons, Dragons, and Growing Up Strange. So what is Dungeons and Dragons?
It's a role-playing game. So if you think of the present role-playing games on computers like World of Warcraft and things like that, it's like one of those before they had a computer. So what will happen is there'll be one guy who's the referee who will have either bought or designed this whole kind of world full of monsters and treasure and things like that, and he will have written all this down, and you will have what's called a character, which is a person whose abilities are defined by a set of statistics that you throw dice to see what their strength is, what their intelligence is, things like that. It's more complicated than this, but anyway, you choose to be a wizard, a warrior, maybe a priest, a thief, and you'll have it described to you. So what will happen is the dungeon master will say you're sitting in the Prancing Pony Inn drinking mead when you're approached by a small squat fellow wearing an eye patch. He says, "Psst, you fancy any work? You guys look like adventurers. Are you up for any work? What do you say?" And you might say, "Get lost," or you might say, "Yeah, yeah, what you got?" And from there on, he will say, "Oh, well, you know, blah, blah, we want you to go and rescue this princess that's been captured up at Castle whatever." Okay, we'll go. And then he'll describe Castle whatever. And when you come to an encounter, say, with a monster, a guardian of this castle, say, a guard or a troll or something, that troll's abilities are represented by statistics. Yours are represented by statistics. And with reference to a set of tables, you can fight this thing using dice to see who kills who. Yeah. That's it at its most basic level, but it is a role-playing game. So at the more complicated levels, you can do anything you can do in real life. You can marry, you can join political parties. In fact, you can do a lot of stuff that you would perhaps have a chance of doing in real life were you not spending all your time playing this game.
Well, you can see, though, why this is so appealing, can't you, to boys especially who maybe have a little fear of what they might or might not be able to do in real life.
Well, it makes the world very understandable. And as I say, things are reduced to statistics, which is a very comforting thing for men. And I've had things, you know, I've got a website, Elfish Gene website, and I've had guys on there saying, "Yes, I've always thought that RPGs are an extremely good reflection of life." And I've replied saying, "Well, I'm not sure they're an exact reflection. You know, you don't approach a girl in the same way as you approach a golden dragon." That's my advice, you know. Or if you think, it gives you this idea that certain issues perhaps can be resolved by throwing a dice. You know, you make your saving throw against your wife's anger. Well, in my experience, you have to make quite a few saving throws before that goes away. You know, it's not quite as simple as just, "Is she still angry with me? I shake a 20. Oh, no, she stopped being angry with me." You know,
don't you wish?
Although, you know, yeah, well, although great steps are taken to try to make these games realistic, particularly in combat systems, and gamers fall into lots of different categories. There are some people who want to know when their character fights a monster exactly where that monster has hit them, virtually what the wound looks like, want to know that when they heal it, they'll be doing it with realistic substances to heal it. And there are other people who just very much more like the shoot 'em up attitude to RPGs online, who just want to go through blasting things, stealing treasure, and don't really want to care about all that kind of thing.
It's kind of like those movies where the bad guy has a revolver that must have 700 bullets in it.
Well, exactly. And there's, you know, what I always say, we were quite into the realism side of it. You know, all I say is, in our world, the Hulk, if he transformed, would have split his shorts. You know, that's we didn't like all that. And people will argue over realism in a game that contains a good amount of vampires, werewolves and dragons. You know, people will say, "That is not realistic, the way your basilisk attacked my giant slug." You know, it wouldn't do it like that.
And they're probably right.
Well, maybe they are. And, you know, we used to kind of spend hours trying to think of what kind of character we'd be in this game. You know, are you going to be a wizard? Are you going to be a monk? What would you be? And people would get really angry about, "You wouldn't ever have the intelligence to be a wizard. You'd have to be a low fighting, the first sort of cannon fodder, that's what you'd be, you know, all this kind of stuff, which was, again, perhaps not good for the self-esteem, but teaches you to stand up for yourself.
Yeah. Hey, do you have a copy of your book with
you? I do.
There's a passage about why D&D is so popular. I wonder if you'd read it for us.
I will. D&D is, I believe, something virtually unique and unprecedented in human history. It's a story that you can listen to at the same time as telling it. You can be surprised by the plot's twists and turns, but you can surprise too. It's more interactive than any other sort of narrative I can think of. If its subject matter were more serious, then it'd probably be considered a new art form. And it's surprising that nothing beyond murder mystery dinners has ever been evolved from it. This is why D&D is so addictive when it's played right. It's like the best story you've ever read, combined with the charge a good storyteller feels as he plays his audience. I think there's a basic human need to listen to stories, but also to tell them. In D&D, you get that tingle you imagine when you think of the ancient storytellers, dusk falling, the campfire burning, and the first line being read. It's not like hearing, "In a hole in the ground lived a hobbit." It's like saying it for the first time and to a rapt audience that's dying for your next sentence. I've finished games feeling physically drained and actually wanted to continue to have my characters buy food at a shop or smoke a pipe in a tavern just to calm down before breaking with the game world entirely. And sometimes even that wasn't enough. The crucial difference between conventional forms of storytelling and D&D is that D&D doesn't have to finish, ever. It's an open-ended story, and if you're emotionally engaged with it, the temptation is just to keep going.
Sometimes when you finished a game, did it seem like the real world was black and white?
Very much so. I mean, the real world to me, when I was a teenager, felt like a very unpleasant place, really. I was at an all-boys school where I didn't really feel that I fitted in. A very kind of working-class school where, you know, the emphasis is on being good at sport and being tough and pretending to be, if not actually being, criminal. And, you know, it was a time in England where we didn't realise we were quite poor, but we were actually quite a poor nation. You know, we were still repaying the debt for World War II, for a start. And our economy just really hadn't really got going after World War II. It was racked by strikes. Politics was polarising hugely. It was going either far left or far right at home. And, I mean, it's the same seedbed that gave rise to punk rock in its particular English incarnation, you know, thinking of the Sex Pistols, people like that, which was extremely angry. And we didn't get angry. We just tried to ignore the world, really, and go to a much more colourful place. And as I say in the book, you know, we were more radical than the punks in a way, and we were more radical than the hippies. We didn't need anything to rebel against. We just wanted the real world to go away, which for some of us, it eventually did.
Tell me about the first character you created. He had your name, right? But also...
Well, this wasn't the very first character I created. The very first character I've created was called Rel Ponto the Necromancer, which is a terrible name, but it was in this homemade version of D&D. And he got killed 12 times in the first game. So,
let him go and you created another.
Well, by the dungeon master, who was finding him increasingly irritating. You know, I had hundreds of characters, but yeah, I had one of my characters was called Efilk Worab, which is my name backwards. And he was, I think, I'm trying to remember now, half elf magic user for those who are old enough to remember that. And eventually, I personally annoyed the dungeon master so much that he turned my character's head into the head of a mule, which I really liked. But I couldn't actually let on to him that I really liked it, or I knew he'd have turned it back again. So I had this. My character became known as Mule Face, and he was this kind of bottom figure from Midsummer Night's Dream going around.
You talked about some of the games you played. Is there one that stands out? Is the most memorable D&D game you ever played?
There was one time when my friend's mother became convinced that fearful that we'd actually killed someone, because she basically overheard the game, and she came in to offer us a cup of tea, because she didn't really understand what was going on with people shouting, "I hit him, I attack him, I kill him," you know. And she picked up the copy of Empire of the Petal Throne, which had got this huge grinning devil pictured on the front. and was kind of thinking, what is this kind of thing? And all the time she was talking, my character's wife had been killed and I wanted to resurrect her. And I just had it by the end of it. I just, when are you going to stop talking about cakes and tea, woman, and allow us to get on with the game? And in the end, I just burst out, where are we going to store the body? And she looked at me and she literally dropped the teapot and just said, what body?
Mark Barracliffe is the author of the memoir The Elfish Gene, Dungeons, Dragons, and Growing Up Strange.